Hi, this is the Dark Tangent. And the speeches you're about to listen to were recorded at DEF CON 6, which was held in July 31st to August 2nd, 1998, at the Plaza Hotel and Casino in Old Downtown Las Vegas. These speeches are copyright, non-commercial use, educational uses only. If you'd like to use them for any other purpose, please contact DEF CON at www.defcon.org or email to dtangent. That's D-T-A-N-G-E-N-T at defcon.org. Now, some of the speeches were lost, so you're getting what we've got recorded. Now sit back and relax, and here comes some knowledge to your head.
All right. My name is John Q. Newman. A lot of you remember me from a couple of years ago. And as most of you guys know, when it comes to computers, well, my technical knowledge is relatively limited. I've only been computer literate for about 3 years. However, you know, my specialty is information, basically personal information and so-called secret information that the government doesn't want us to know what they know and how you can find out what they know and for me to tell it to you. Oh, I have a message for Mr. Schwartow. You run over next year this time. We at Index have a trained killer on our staff. He'll make some information warfare with us. Okay. Now, I want to make one quick comment about the First Amendment. As you know, Paladin Press, who Index wholesales a number of their books, is facing a lawsuit over a book called Hitman. Unfortunately, the appellate courts have sent this lawsuit back to be tried again. It's going to be tried in Maryland, probably by a conservative jury. There's a very real chance that Paladin might have to appeal this all the way to the Supreme Court. I'm not saying, guys, you need to open your checkbooks and donate tons and tons of money to Paladin. But what you do need to do is that if these publishers, Paladin, Index, Lupanics, and others, produce material that you find to be useful, you need to patronize them. Because as you know, there's a chilling, growing Big Brother movement in this country that says people don't have the right to know anymore because some people take the right to know and then do bad acts. So we need your support. Companies like Index are your publishers. We're there to provide the hard copy information in book form that you guys like and need to pursue your own pursuits. In that vein, I also want to say is that Glenn Vandiver, the publisher of Index, is interested in hearing about possible book ideas for many of you people here. As you know, we're trying to increase our list in the computer area. So I appreciate it. If you guys have some ideas, you should talk to him tomorrow at the table, and he'll explain to you what you have to do to write a book to get it published. But they are actively looking for books by people with your expertise. That's not a bullshit story. It's actually the truth. Today, my talk is going to be one that won't thrill those who are the law enforcement community. David, how fugitive elude the police. As you know, I've written a bunch of books on new identity, alternate identity, U.S. identity documents, the whole gamut of things. But a lot of times people will say to me, well, how did that person stay free for all these years? And how did they get caught or whatever? Well, today I'm going to take you through how fugitives successfully elude the police, what databases police have available to them at the state, local, and federal level to locate somebody, and how you can successfully craft an identity program that will make it, even if you're a most wanted person for multiple murders and bank robbery and a $10 million bank fraud, that they'll never catch you, and you don't have to live looking over your shoulder. Now, once again, I'm not telling you to go out and do this stuff, but I'm saying, hey, why not find out how those that have done it? And in that vein, hey, I'm a shill. This is my latest book, second edition, called The Heavy Duty New Identity, a book that PI Magazine says the toughest new ID book ever written. This book has been updated to reflect all the new stuff that the feds and other agencies have available to locate you. Okay, the first thing we need to look at is what exactly is a fugitive. Technically, a fugitive is anyone in police jargon that is out of pocket. That means they don't have you. Fugitives range from all the way from people that have unpaid parking tickets, which in some jurisdictions can actually go to warrant, to somebody who's wanted for murder. The type of fugitive determines what kind of search or manhunt, to use the lingo, is mounted for you. Clearly, somebody who's got a warrant out for 50 unpaid parking tickets is not going to be the subject of a multi-million-dollar manhunt. That kind of fugitive is what we call basically a data fugitive. What they do is they put on national computer information computer on the local area that you are wanted for these parking tickets. If you get pulled over, usually within that jurisdiction or that state, you're going to be pinched. It is not usually what we call an extraditable warrant, which is where you're going to be interested in. Extraditable warrants are like for felonies or serious misdemeanors. If you killed somebody in California yesterday, and they know that you did, and you're in Nevada, if you get pulled over in Nevada, you have what's called an extraditable warrant. That means the state of California has said, no matter where you find this individual, arrest him, notify us, we will come get him and return him back to the jurisdiction that originated the arrest warrant. The extraditable warrants are the ones that go into what's called NCIC. Everybody knows NCIC stands for the National Crime Information Center. The key part of that is the NCIC mainframe computer. On the NCIC computer, there are a number of files. For example, there's a stolen vehicle file, stolen license file, wanted persons index, missing persons index, even a Secret Service protective index of people like our friend who last week in the Capitol took the lives of two well-meaning men who didn't deserve to be killed. If you happen to get on that index, if a cop pulls you over, then that's going to show up. So the hot files, as it's said in the parlance of NCIC, are the wanted person index and usually the stolen vehicle index. When you get pulled over by a police officer, when he comes and asks you for your license, the first thing that he does is generally check against these two files, because if either your car or you show up on either one of those systems, you're probably going to be arrested. In fact, before he pulls you over, he will have checked the stolen vehicle index. He'll run the license plate and the state number. He'll look for two things, wants and warrants. A warrant on the vehicle is obvious. It means the car is stolen or somebody thinks it's stolen. A warrant on the vehicle means that this is a vehicle that potentially has been seen involved with the crime, and they may impound it, they may ask you questions about why you're driving the car, whatever. He's already done that before he pulls you over. Depending what that check told him, that determines whether or not he approaches you with his hand on his gun and says, exit the car and turn it off, so-called felony traffic stop, or if he ambles over and says, let me see your license and this is why I pulled you over. Officers do that, and I kind of agree that they should do this because it's for their own safety. They don't know when they pull somebody over until they run those first two checks whether or not it's a routine traffic stop or you may come out shooting. After he takes your license, he goes back to his car, and now there's usually a mobile terminal in the car, but in the old days, they would have to do it through their dispatcher. The first thing he'll do is he will either check the license validity, which he does through a hookup with the state DMV. There's something called NLEX, or the National Law Enforcement Telecommunications System. This allows him to access DMV data from all 50 states and state-level non-extraditable arrest data from these same states. So he'll run your license to make sure it's real, that it wasn't one you bought in downtown LA for $100. That comes back, your license is real. If it's an out-of-state license, he'll usually get less data. Like if you get pulled over in Nevada, all he may get back is yes, the license is valid, and what the expiration date of the license is, and some biographical data. Some state systems, if you get pulled over in the same state, they'll get the whole licensing history, moving violations, everything since you've been driving. It just depends. Once he verifies that your license is in fact valid and belongs to you, then he will run the Wanted Persons Index from the NCIC. What happens is it will take your name and your birthday and look for a hit. If the officer gets a hit, he doesn't immediately assume it's valid because, for example, if your name is John F. Smith and you were born on July 8, 1960, there may be five or six other John F. Smiths who have warrants out who have the same birthday. What he does then is try to load down the whole warrant entry to make sure that other things match, like proof of sex. Obviously, if John F. Smith is a woman, because John is short for Joanna, or something like that, and you're a male, you're off the hook. Obviously, if John F. Smith is black and you're white, you're probably off the hook. Most of the time, hits on the system, in fact, aren't erroneous, because when the other identifiers are loaded, they are not the same. At any given time, there's over 500,000 arrest warrants on the system. However, the system is not perfect. A study done about 10 years ago estimated that there's 10,000 to 15,000 people that, if they are pulled over by police, are actually in danger of being falsely arrested. If you get falsely arrested because of erroneous data on NCIC, you can expect to stay there until either fingerprint comparison or a fax from the originating department with the person's picture comes through and it's obvious it ain't you. But you can be arrested. Your ability to sue for false arrest is pretty limited so long as the officer tried to verify the other identifiers on the warrant entry. Unfortunately, a lot of warrant entries are not complete. It is possible to enter a warrant with just a name and one numerical identifier, sometimes just a year of birth. Now, luckily, the FBI conducts regular audits of warrant entries into NCIC, and they make it clear to local police departments that they must use care and be very careful when entering warrant entries because of the liability problems and just the bad press of people routinely being wrongfully arrested when there's not that person they're looking for. So there is some protection there. So this is the one database they use. The officer will also always check the state level non-extraditable warrant database, usually in the state that your license is from. If you're out of state and he finds that you're wanted for a parking ticket warrant, usually he'll just tell you because he knows he can't arrest you for it. So those are what we call the NCIC hot files that they will check you against. Now, there's another database called III. And III is basically the FBI's ultimate goal, that they can have a comprehensive criminal record database. Mind you, there is a difference between criminal record database and a warrant database. You can have a warrant database. Right now, I pull out a gun and shoot this gentleman and run out. That's a warrant, okay? But if I killed somebody last year, and the judge gave me probation for killing somebody, that's a criminal record. If you check me for a warrant, my record for murder that was paroled won't show up. What the FBI wants to do is create a comprehensive database where they can say, okay, we pulled over John Q. Public. Does John Q. Public have a record for a serious misdemeanor or a felony anywhere in any of the jurisdictions of the United States or in the federal system? To do this, it's called the Interstate Identification Index, or III. The way III is supposed to work is that all states are supposed to forward conviction and arrest data to the FBI on a regular basis. This information will then be put into a standardized format and entered into the III Index. One impetus for this came because of the Brady gun bill, the one that requires us to submit to a police check before we can buy a handgun now. The way that that works is when you fill out the form at the gun dealer to buy the handgun, the first database they check, of course, is to see that if there are any warrants out for you. If that's clear, the state then checks the state equivalent of III. All states usually have what's known as a centralized Bureau of Criminal Identification or Criminal Index. This is compiled from all of the state court jurisdictions within the same state, sending their records to the state capitol and creating the centralized database only for that state. For example, you get arrested in New York State. The first thing that they do is they send your fingerprints and your biographical identifiers to the New York Criminal Information System, or NICIS for short. NICIS will then look for a match on the fingerprints and the biographicals. If there is no match, NICIS will then automatically switch that data onto NCIC. And then NCIC will look for a match in it files in the Interstate Identification Index. In fact, NYPD Blue a few years ago had an episode where Sipowicz, his son, was mistakenly arrested on what's called a John Doe warrant. Well, they have a description, but no biographical. He was walking to work, got arrested because he looked like a drug dealer, and then, of course, they took his fingerprints and were about to send it off to NYCIS. His father intervened because in New York State, if you have a NYCIS number, people know that means you've been arrested for a criminal charge, and it can make it very difficult to get professional licenses and other things. So in the end, the NYCIS operator agreed to reject the query based on the fact that the fingerprint card wasn't completed correctly. But of course, he was the son of a cop. That won't happen to you and I in real life. In any case, NCIC, or NCIC 2000, which is the FBI's current program, is designed to make this system truly comprehensive. Right now, the records are not complete, and many times they don't, in only about 20 to 30% of the cases that they run somebody's name through, do they get back a complete dossier. It's still necessary for arresting officers to go through and check state-level systems for stuff that might not show up. III is what is checked when you try to buy a gun. They check the state system first, then they check III. So what does that mean if you want to create a new identity? That means if you go about using the identity of a baby who died shortly after birth, once you get some identity documents, you can go try to buy a gun. If you can buy a gun with this identity, you can pretty much conclude that that person doesn't have any serious criminal history anyplace in the United States. Okay? This is a thing that did not intend this. But in fact, they have made it easier now for people who want to create new identities based on people who have been born but died early in life, because in a couple of years, the Brady Bill is going to supposed to make it that you can be instantly approved to buy a gun when NCIC 2000 is implemented and gun dealers are directly online. That means you can create this fake identity and say, okay, I got to know that nobody else has used this identity and gotten a criminal record. You go try to buy a gun, gun dealer runs the name, says, yep, you're good to go, here's your pistol. And you just know that that identity does not have criminal history to it of any serious import. They did not intend that. Okay. Now, let's talk about what happens when they're trying to locate a serious fugitive. A few weeks ago, a reporter from the AP, Tim Whitmire, called me and said, hey, there was this woman in Kentucky. She was the treasurer of a small town. She embezzled about $55,000. And she went on the lam, lived on the lam successfully for 7 years, and then the FBI found her. How did this happen? Well, I told him it was probably a case of a weak identity change, and that's what the feds count on. So let's look at what happened. You've committed 2 murders, and you're going on the lam. How are they going to find you? And we're going to assume that they know your name, they know your birthday, they may even have your fingerprints because you've been in the system before. What are they going to do to locate you? The first thing that they're going to do is they're going to put together a file on everything that they know about you. Your family. Do you have brothers and sisters? Your habits. The kind of car you drive. The license plate number. The VIN number. Special hobbies. They're going to try to put together as much data on you as possible because there's certain things they're going to look for. One common thing, and this is one of the mistakes this woman made, was that she took the identity of her sister and used that to live under. Well, policemen aren't stupid. And this is one thing, especially smart people like you, need to understand, is that everybody who works for the law enforcement, people aren't dumb. They're not all automatons. They understand what people will do, and they understand that one of the classic ways to quickly create a new identity, so to speak, is to use the identity of your brother or sister who isn't on the lam. So they look for records being created in this person's name in a different location. They know if Sally Smith actually lives in Reno, but all of a sudden they see that Sally Smith now has a new marriage license issued in San Diego and a driver's license in San Diego, that maybe this is really her sister Joanne, who's wanted for murder or interstate bank robbery, and then they will pay her a visit. That's essentially what happened to this woman. She had married under her sister's name, had gotten new ID under her name in another state in Texas. Her original crime was in Kentucky, and it didn't take Einstein to put two and two together and figure out it was her. Now, she stole less than $100,000. Why did it take 7 years? Because it's an unfortunate truism that there is so much violent crime in this country that unless you're a murderer or a multiple rapist or take millions of dollars, that there isn't going to be this big manhunt. Manhunt is an overused term. Okay? Even if it's a murderer, when they can't locate the person right away, after a while, the officers assigned to that case have to deal with more current cases where there's a better chance at apprehending someone. So the first thing that you have to understand is this, is they are going to, like, look at your family. Look at calls that you make home. They'll go interview your family. Now, most family members of people who are wanted for violent crimes, like the Unabomber, are people who will say, turn yourself in, we don't want anything to do with you, blah, blah, blah. Be that as it may, for a while, they may get a warrant to tap your mother, your sister, your brother's telephone. So it's probably wise not to make calls home, especially collectors. Okay? They may also do what's called a postal cover. A postal cover doesn't require a warrant because technically the mail never leaves the custody of the post office. A postal cover is very simple. I'm sorting the mail for your house because I'm a postman delivering on your route. I'm sorting the mail over here. FBI agent standing here writing down the address that envelope came from. That's a postal cover. It's informal. The mail never leaves the custody of my hands as the United States postal worker. Therefore, they don't need a warrant. Now, if it becomes clear that you're not calling home, that your family is not supporting your life on the land, then eventually these things stop. So, this is what, like I said, obvious mistakes that are made. The other thing is that you have to decide the most dangerous times for the new heavy-duty fugitive are initially when he goes on the land and then years later, because then he's not so sharp as to what's going on. So the first thing is that when you build a new identity, this new identity, if you can, needs to be built in advance of the crime that you're intending to commit. The second thing is police officers count on one thing. That is, people don't change. For example, a serial killer is a serial killer. Bank robbers are bank robbers. The FBI catches most bank robbers. And bank robbery is a stupid crime. You get a few thousand dollars, but it's dangerous. Now, if you say, I'm only going to rob a bank twice and then retire, they'll probably never catch you if you're careful. But bank robberies aren't like that. They rob the bank, then they go spend the money, got to go rob another bank. Each time they rob a bank, they leave clues as to their modus operandi. So even if you've robbed 10 banks in the LA area, then you skip town under your new identity and relocate to Maine. If you start robbing banks there, even though they don't know what your new identity is, they're going to say, hey, wait a minute, isn't this the same MO of the guy back there in LA? So now they know where you are, even without knowing your name, because you won't stop doing the crime. So the other key thing is, if you're a heavy-duty fugitive, you have to stop committing criminal acts if you want your new identity to work. For example, let's say you like to murder people. Well, you may say, okay, I want to kill three people to get it out of my system, and after that, I'm gonna become a Sunday school teacher and live in Vermont. Now, if you do that, you go kill three people in, San Francisco, and then you say, okay, I'm done. Okay, well, just as they are starting to develop an MO for you and everything else, you finish. You don't ever kill anybody again. They'll probably never catch you if you created a good work of a long-term identity and don't make obvious mistakes. Now, you keep killing people. After you get to Vermont, they're going to find you. There's other things you can do to send the horses off in the wrong direction. One way is to create what are called false leads. False leads are very easy to create. Let's say you get on America's Most Wanted. Well, there's no reason why you can't call them in and say, yeah, I don't want to give my name, but you know, I saw Raul Gomez in Hawaii. yeah, that's him, I know it's him. Then somebody else calls, maybe it's you using a voice changer on a different phone. Yeah, I think I saw this guy too. Well, boom, you've got two, three sightings with good information, like the height and weight kind of matched, and the tattoo matched and whatever. So guess what happens? The posse gets reoriented to looking for Raul Gomez in Hawaii, which is good because you're really chilling in New Rural in Georgia. Okay? Now, let's look at some other obvious mistakes. I do not know why I read all these identity books and it says, go to a small town. Now look, what happens in Mayberry? I moved to Mayberry. I'm a black man. Okay? I'm a quiet guy, keep to myself, write my books, whatever. But it's like, well, Paul, who's that black man down at the A&P? Paul, who's that new guy over at the post office? In small towns, people know what other people are doing. There is no anonymity. You go to Orlando, you come here to Vegas, you go to New York, you go to San Francisco, you don't go to East Podunk. I don't know why people do not understand it. I guess it's something about the romanticism of small town America. But the cops count on that fact too, that people go to these small towns. No, that's not where you go. You go away from the small town. You throw false leads, you don't go to small towns, and you stop killing people or murdering people or doing bank fraud. You gotta stop. But no, nobody seems to understand this. It just gets me. What's another thing that I've seen in so many books on new identity and fugitives is, go to Canada or go to Mexico and hide out there because Mexico is great. Okay, Mexico is great. Good tequila, nice sunshine, pretty women. I like Mexico. Canada's even better. But the problem is, the second you cross the border as an American, and you can ask any Canadian, you stick out like a sore thumb. Don't just think, because Canadians speak English and it's next door, that they don't know when Americans are, how y'all doing, that this person's an American. You stick out like a sore thumb. The other problem is, at some point, when you cross the border, you've got to come back. When you come back and cross the border, you thought NCIC was bad. You're going to have to deal with something called TEC, which is the Treasury Enforcement Computer System. The TEC system takes NCIC and goes many steps further. They have not only, they can access all the files of NCIC, but they can also access files that let them check and see if the address on your license is one that's of interest to them because it belongs to a drug dealer. They can check to see if any vehicle that's been registered to you has been used to cross the border. At some point, when you are in another country, you will have to come back. Most Americans do not know the first thing about Canada. What's the social security number called in Canada? Most Americans don't know. How are they made up? How do you get ID in Canada? How do Canadians do things? An American doesn't have a clue. He stands out. It's even worse in Mexico, even if you speak Spanish. The other problem is these countries all have immigration laws. Even if you're black and go to the Caribbean, if I go to Jamaica, it's pretty obvious I'm not a Jamaican one. And there's some Jamaican immigration law. If I stay there more than 30 or 60 days, I'm going to wind up breaking. It's always the same problem. But these are the classic mistakes that are made. The final mistake that's made, because we're short of time, is telling people. I don't understand this one either. I just killed three people. Do I really think that my new girlfriend that I've made in, Charlotte, North Carolina, is still going to think it's okay that I'm a murderer after I tell her? No. But in the heat of passion, people are known to say things. The FBI and the Secret Service and the U.S. Marshals count on that too. Because then when you break up, that's what she does. Oh, a reward. Hey, Joe Blow is really, whatever, who's wanted for murders in the next state over. And that's why, and before I stop, that the government offers money. Because money shakes loose information. They've caught terrorists that way. As the pie gets offered, as the crime you do goes up, the more money will be offered. As the money goes up, the more people will talk. You'd be amazed at how many relatives will turn in another relative if you dangle even $10,000. The last thing is your worst enemy, forget the police, is a bail bondsman. If you skip on, say, $50,000 worth of bail before your truck, you don't need to worry about the FBI. You need to worry about the bounty hunter. because they have to pay that money to the court, and they don't have to do things the way the police have to do. They're going to run your social security number through credit bureaus, they're going to run a body history on your car, they're going to drive by your parents' house on anybody's birthday. The bounty hunter is out to get your ass because typically he might get half of the bail amount that was posted. So he's even worse, okay? So that's all I've got to say. Look, I'm not telling you to kill anybody. I'm not telling you to blow up any bridges. I'm not telling you to sting Bank of America for $1 million, although if you do, I think that's okay. What I'm telling you is if you do the crime and don't want to do the time, then this edition of the Heavy Duty New Identity is for you. It just came out. Although the index table is closed today, it will be open tomorrow. There's just a couple other ones. Hey, I'm a shill. Okay, I admit it, but I want to shill for you. I've got a new book called Privacy Power. This book gives a step-by-step plan on how to get your data out of a bunch of these data banks so that people have to work real hard if they want to learn about you. Okay? Got another book out. Hey, I've been busy since last year. What can I tell you? I got another book out called Credit Power. It's not just about credit repair, but it's about all players in the credit system, how applications are scored, credit culture, lending history, Fair Isaac scores, all sorts of interesting stuff like that. Now, you guys are all computer literate. The best book, if you want to learn how to manufacture, like birth certificates and other documents at home on your computer, is a book that we're selling called Acquiring New ID. Okay. This is an excellent book. It's from our sister, Pratt at Paladin. We're wholesaling this book. If you read this book, knowing that you guys know, I want you to call me because you guys are going to be putting the State Vital Statistics Bureau out of business. Okay? This is an excellent book for computer types. This is a very good book to have on your reference shelf. Finally, How to Investigate Your Friends, Enemies, and Lovers. We had this out last year. You want to know LeVar Burton's social security number? It's 565-1390-900. Okay? This talks about all the information that's public record. His SS number is on page 145. Bobby of the Brady Bunch, we got his SS number and real address on page 144. They're public figures, there's nothing they can do about it, but what this book shows you is how you can prove or disprove all the funk the public figures and others like to say they have, and how you can find out about any friend, enemy, or lover. Lastly, but not least, there's a new book on identity changing came out last year. It's called Modern Identity Changer. This is also put out by Paladin. We're wholesaling index. Very good book. Got some very good tips. Finally, my pièce de résistance, third edition of Reborn in the USA, will be